The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 15. A quick announcement for you guys before we get started here in the podcast. We have just opened up registration for our second session of Frequent Flyer Bootcamp, which takes people who are confused about how to best redeem their frequent flyer miles and turns them into experts in just 1 month. We teach you how to add free stopovers, open jaws, and free one-ways onto your award tickets through live question and answer sessions, an interactive Facebook group, and video tutorials. Our last group just got done their one-month learning session. We have free travel coming out of our ears. There was tons of learning going on. It was absolutely awesome. If you are interested in joining this second session, make sure you head on over to extrapackofpeanuts.com/frequentflyerbootcamp because registration is limited to the first 30 people. So if you're interested, go over there and sign up now. And we're going to get to our podcast, which is a great interview with Tom Allen of Tom's Bike Trip. But before that, why don't we give you a little trivia? Did you know that Armenia is the world's oldest Christian nation? Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is the creator and star of the indie film, Janapar, and a man who knows a thing or two about epic bike trips, Tom Allen of TomsBikeTrip.com. Tom, thanks so much for coming on the show, and welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
For those who don't know, Tom did a screening of his film and a question and answer at the World Domination Summit that we were both at a few weeks ago. And unfortunately, I didn't get to attend the screening, but I did enlist a mutual friend, Sean Aiken, to track him down and introduce the two of us so that hopefully he'd agree to our own Q&A here on the podcast. And you have, Tom. So again, I appreciate that.
Indeed. Well, I think it's going to be an interesting chat.
Tom, how did the screening of Janapar at WDS go then?
That's a story in itself, actually. I was cycling down the west coast of the US last year. I started in Vancouver, BC, cycled for 2 months and found myself in Pasadena, where Chris, the guy who created the World Domination Summit, was doing a book launch event. I was just there for a couple of days. He was doing the event and I thought, well, I'll go along. So I did, and I hung around at the end. There was a bit of an after party. I got chatting about this documentary, which at the time was it was unreleased. It was a finished film, but it hadn't been put out there. It hadn't been premiered or launched. Showed him the trailer on his iPhone, and he was like, "Hey, this is really good. send me a copy when you finished it." So a few months later, I sent a copy in the mail over from the UK to Portland, and he sent me an email saying, really, really enjoyed your film. I'd really like to show it to the guys at the WDS in Portland next year, if you're up for coming.
Awesome.
Which I replied, hell yes.
Of course.
And that's how it happened, really.
Wow. You'll never know who you're going to meet when you're just out doing things like that. I've been very surprised by the amount of people that I've met that I've stayed in contact with and been really helpful in growing my business and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a running theme with travel. You come into contact with so many people, and you never quite know. I mean, a lot of these people, obviously, you'll meet them once, and that will be that, and it'll be a pleasant memory. But sometimes, it leads to other things, and obviously, one of those meetings is at the core of the story of the film as well, as you will know.
Yeah, and let's get into the movie a little bit itself. I actually watched it a couple weeks ago then after WDS. It's an amazing film. We'll tell everyone where they can go see it and stuff like that and talk a little bit about it without ruining it for them. But let's start with the movie itself. Where did the idea come from? Like, how did it start, and what is the movie actually about?
Well, the movie is about it's actually a love story, disguised as an adventure travel film, I suppose you could describe it. So it has got it's a very long road trip on my part, which lasted for about 3.5 years. But things didn't go quite as I'd originally planned when I set out. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that about just over half a year into the journey, I was in Armenia. I'd been on the road for 8 months, and I just happened to meet a girl. And when I met her, I didn't really think much more of it. But very, very quickly, it appeared that meeting this girl had kind of thrown a spanner in the works of my trip. But you know, nevertheless, I did continue traveling, and it was 3.5 years later that I eventually could say that I'd finished the journey. And this meeting, I suppose, kind of affected everything that happened on that trip, and took it in an entirely different direction to what I'd ever, you know, anything I'd ever really imagined would be what the trip was going to be about.
And we should mention that when he says he hit the road, he was not in a vehicle per se, not in a car or a truck or anything like that. What were you doing? How were you getting around the world?
Oh yeah, I should probably mention that I was riding a push bike. So the entire journey was pedal powered, and I never took a plane for any of the bicycle journey at all for 3.5 years.
And had you then, when you started this trip, how did it come about? I mean, obviously it was a dream you had at one point, and then what made you actually say, you know what, I'm going to get on a bike and I'm going to try to basically, I think your goal was to cycle around the earth originally.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, that, as you say, originally the plan was to do a full round the world bike trip, but it didn't, you know, it didn't just come into my head one day, oh, I think I'll cycle around the world. It started as a little spark, an idea to go traveling, which, you know, so many people have that dream when they're, especially when they're young and relatively unconstrained. The thing is, I wasn't quite sure how I was going to do it, because, you know, I had friends who'd gone and done the backpacking thing. Right. And they'd gone for a few months and they'd come back with empty bank accounts and sunburn and a few signs of premature aging from heavy drinking. And I wasn't quite sure that was really the kind of travel experience that I wanted. You know, at the same time, I didn't quite know what I did want. And it was only when a friend of mine, who I ended up starting the trip with, suggested bicycling, that I thought, hang on, that actually ticks a lot of the boxes, because I didn't want to rely on public transport. I didn't want to be kind of stuck in this kind of chain of hostels and, you know, bus ride, all that kind of stuff. I wanted [S2] Right. [S1] To kind of be a bit more free. And I was, you know, I grew up in the countryside. I really loved being outdoors. I'd put on a little bit of weight as a student by being really unhealthy, and I figured that I might want to try and, you know, lose some of that and get fit again. And also, as a recent graduate, I had absolutely no money whatsoever. So, you know, my criteria for traveling were really be independent, be outdoors, you know, have my own means of transport, my own accommodation kind of plan. Get fit and save a lot of cash. And the more I thought about cycling, the more it made sense that would actually do all of those things in one. So it wasn't because I was a big cyclist or I loved riding bicycles or anything like that. It was because it ticked all these boxes for what I wanted from traveling. And, you know, I started looking into it, and one, you know, things snowballed, and before I knew it, really, me and my mate who suggested it were planning this full round the world thing, which maybe was a little ill advised, but we were young and naive and a bit wet behind the ears, and we thought we were it and all that, and so that's what we were planning to do.
Very neat. Yeah. So then, selfish question here, because obviously, you started the trip. I guess I'll ask you, did you start the trip thinking that you would film it and then make it into any type of movie or documentary?
I was never planning to film it, and that's because I'd never picked up a video camera. And
okay.
I didn't even, the thought didn't even cross my mind, to be quite honest. I was more interested in photography and writing, especially writing. That was kind of the thing that I liked to do. And I felt, you know, I thought, well, there's going to be a cool story here somehow. Maybe I'm not quite sure what it's going to be yet, but there's definitely going to be a story to tell at the end of it all. And then I got a phone call from a guy who had heard about me through a friend of a friend and what we were planning to do. And he was from a production company, a brand new production company in London, just him and another guy. They were film school graduates, and they were looking for a story for a factual film project.
Right.
And they said to us, well, have you ever thought about, you know, taking a video camera and trying to record some of this epic round the world trip that you're about to embark upon? So we were like, well, no, but we could have a little chat about that. And so we went down and visited them in their office in London, and came away with, you know, full of enthusiasm, because they'd convinced us that, you know, film was a really powerful way of telling a story, and that, you know, with a little bit of guidance from them, we could gather the footage needed to, you know, make something really good. And so, yeah, we started recording video diaries before we left, and then set off and tried to capture the experience as we went along.
Yeah, pretty interesting how it went from not being filmed to then, yeah, the whole process of you filming it and now actually being made into a movie is pretty amazing. Now, I love the cinematography in the film, and, you know, I'm someone who's always looking to try to improve my travel videos. What type of equipment did you travel with, and what are some of the biggest pieces of advice you can give people like me who, you know, want to take more videos and maybe try to cut them into smaller little films so that we can tell stories of our travels?
Well, in terms of equipment, we set off with two cameras. They were very old, secondhand, kind of semi-professional Canon video cameras. They ran on these little mini DV cassette tapes. So we're going back 6 years. So this was before DSLRs and all their fancy video capabilities.
Yeah.
So they were big and they were clunky and they're impractical. And I should say that what we very quickly realized after the first few weeks of filming was that we hadn't actually got a clue what we were doing with the video cameras. We spent 6 weeks filming before we bothered to watch any of the tapes back. And when we did, it was just like being punched in the stomach, because the footage was absolutely bloody awful. It was unwatchable. And the film guys were kind of saying, yeah, you kind of need to work on your camera skills and your storytelling skills, guys. And the fact was that we'd set off having never really used a video camera before and expected to turn out professional quality footage, whereas, you know, it's actually a very difficult thing, and it requires a lot of thought and a lot of skill and dedication, and we hadn't got any of that. So the film guys kind of lost interest, and after about 4 months after we left, we didn't really ever hear from them again. We were
really
kind of left on our own.
Okay.
Yeah, so we actually went and bought a brand new video camera about 3 months into the trip with quite a lot of, it cost quite a lot of money, and it represented probably a year's worth of on the ground living costs, because we were really enthusiastic about, you know, where the story could go. But then to be told that basically no one's really interested in the footage and we're pulling the plug, was a real downer. And so at that point, we were just kind of left on our own with a very expensive video camera and 6 months worth of really crap footage and no real idea where anything was going. So it hasn't been easy, like, by any stretch of the imagination. And so I guess following on from that, the biggest piece of advice I would give someone who wants to take a video camera traveling and tell stories of what they get up to is to get a hell of a lot of practice in before you actually leave.
Okay, very good advice.
Yeah, and that is mostly on the storytelling side of things, because you can quite easily learn how to frame a decent image and capture like good quality pictures, but to know what exactly needs to be filmed, and especially what needs to be narrated, like what people need to be telling to the eventual viewer. That's what a lot more thought, the storytelling side of stuff. And that's also an area of travel video making which is really neglected if you do go into the online resources. It's all about the technicalities, but there's not a lot of storytelling stuff.
So actually kind of plan out things that are going to happen before they happen almost.
Yeah, you really need to be thinking in terms of what an editor is actually going to want into footage when it eventually comes to being cut together later on. So, you know, something really dramatic might be happening and you might be filming it, but if you forget to kind of backtrack and establish where and in what context this story is happening, it's very difficult for someone to come to then edit it into something that has any kind of relevance, because we don't know what the context is. And likewise, if the people involved don't express what they feel about it afterwards and how it's, you know, what they've learned from it and how it's affected their experience, there's no payoff to this interesting thing which has happened either. So it's about trying to make sure that every film has, you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end, this kind of classic story structure, as well as making sure that the shots are in focus and, you know, well-composed and all that kind of low-level stuff.
Sure. And so taking yourself out of it a little bit, right? Because for you, you've done it every day, you've seen all the stuff, but I guess taking yourself out of it and saying, what has someone who is only going to be watching the video, what do they already know? I think that's a very hard thing to do.
It really is. And that's, again, why I think that practice is really essential. It's so all-encompassing, that thought process of trying to think on every level at the same time about the overall relevance of what you're filming and all the little details of actually operating the camera and everything in between, as well as actually being there and dealing with the experience, whatever it might be. It might be something quite arduous or dramatic or challenging. So it's tough. It's really tough. And that's, yeah, again, just practicing as much as you can before you leave makes it much more likely that when you do get into a situation like that and you are filming it, it's going to be worth editing and sharing later on.
Yeah, and being on your own then for a large majority of the trip, how much time did you spend actually setting up shots each day? Because there'll be shots of you biking away or biking towards the camera, which you've obviously set the camera down and then set up the shot. So how much time did you spend actually doing that? And were there days where you just could not be bothered to do it at all, or weeks on end where you said, I don't even care, I'm not going to film anything?
Yeah, there were periods of several weeks where I didn't film anything. And you're right, it's a really big commitment, and you have to really kind of assume the role of a filmmaker if you want what you're making to be accessible to people, to be, you know, worthy of their attention. And so, yeah, I did spend, you know, quite a lot of effort and time setting up these shots. I had a tripod with me, and I would set up whenever I saw a particularly stunning landscape, I would get a tripod, I would set up the camera, I'd get all the white balance and exposure and focus and all that kind of stuff correct. And then I would cycle off into the distance and hope that no one nicked the camera, and I'd come back again and pick it all up and watch it to make sure that it looked good. And, you know, that's almost an hour. That's about, you know, 14, 15 miles of lost ground or lost time, if you look at it that way. So it's a big commitment.
Right. For 10 seconds of video, or 15 seconds at most of video, right?
Exactly. Or not even that, just one clip between two stories in a finished film.
Wow.
That might be it. And again, and because it's such a big commitment, that's why I made sure I put the camera away for long periods of time, because, you know, the main point of my trip was the experience of being on the road, not making the film. The film was a side project and a hobby, and so I didn't want it to overtake the whole experience.
Yeah, well, we're all very happy. I mean, people who have seen it, I know myself, are very happy that you did decide to take the time to film it, because it is truly inspirational. It's a really neat story. And since then, since Janipar, you've continued to do more adventure cycling tours, correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I say that the journey took 3.5 years, but it's more complicated than that in reality. Of course, it's just obviously necessary to top and tail a story. You've got to find a start point and end point which makes sense. You start with a question and you finish with an answer, kind of thing. But in reality, you know, as soon as I actually returned to the UK, I was almost immediately off on another trip, and I went off to the north of the Scandinavian Arctic in winter on a bicycle to kind of try and take my cycle adventuring to another level, I suppose, try and explore a different set of circumstances. And since then, I've done at least one multi-month trip a year in different parts of the world. And I don't see myself getting bored of it, as long as I keep it true to my own reasons for doing it, rather than trying to outdo my previous trips, which is a kind of a posturing way of looking at it.
Right. Now, have you then filmed these other trips? Is there any desire to turn them into, you know, smaller movies, or is it just to take the trip just to do it almost?
I made a very, very, very short film from the Scandinavian trip. And that was just, I knew exactly what I wanted it to look like before I even left home. I think I filmed about 20 minutes of footage And I put it together in a couple of hours when I got home, and I was really happy with that, and I knew exactly what it was, and I made sure it was contained. But, you know, a feature film is something else. And the guys who edited it, they were stuck in a cupboard for 10 weeks, basically editing this thing. It's such a huge project. And so I've been really reluctant to take on another feature length film, because now I know how much is required, how much it takes out of you. And obviously there's no money in indie film. And so we've all been working on this for peanuts.
Yeah, well, now that you're not naive to it, like when you were younger, you were naive to it. You said, we're just going to do it. Now that you're not naive to it, it becomes a whole different animal to actually think, I'm going to do it and I know what it entails this time.
Exactly. There's a kind of beauty in being naive, though, in which there's a really great quote. I can't remember exactly the wording. And it's something like, no one told them it was impossible, so they did it.
Yeah.
It was referring to some kind of expedition or something, which I think is impossible to pull, or thought was impossible to pull off. And a bunch of guys went and did it because they hadn't heard it was meant to be impossible, and they pulled it off anyway. So by being naive, they managed to actually see it through.
I think that's one of the beauties of traveling, is that if you haven't been somewhere before, you usually don't know what to expect. And you just kind of do whatever you want to do at that moment, because you don't know if it's right or wrong, or not right or wrong, but if people shouldn't do it or can't do it, you don't care. You're just doing it. And that's,
exactly. You're not asking, are you supposed to be doing this?
Right, right.
You're exactly right. I completely agree.
So why do you think then, you said cycling was not a huge thing for you growing up or anything like that. Why do you think cycling is your preferred way to travel now?
Well, I mean, yeah, like I said before, I mean, I've obviously developed a certain amount of fitness as a result of cycling quite a long way.
3.5 years of cycling.
But it's more because of the opportunity that it offers to get back to basics and really live on the road and, you know, at the pace of a push bike and on the ground and with complete exposure and connection with people and places. You know, I really just find that it ticks all these boxes, which are important for me as a traveler, which doesn't mean I'm going to limit myself just to cycling. And in fact, I'm looking at a trip later this year, which will involve a lot of walking and some kayaking.
Okay.
In inflatable kayaks, but that's still just in the idea stage. So right. I'm not going to say any more.
Keep it hush hush.
Exactly. In the same, I don't want to commit to anything without being sure. But in the same way, walking and paddling the river, these are also just ways of exploring a place slowly and deeply. And for me, traveling is all about new experiences and learning and, you know, trying new things and being challenged rather than like pure fun, if you know what I mean. Just you know, engaging with the world, really. And those are other ways that I think might offer the same kind of experience as being on a bicycle without actually having to pedal all day.
Yeah, I think that I'm just sitting here shaking my head. I think everything you said is completely true. And I think that's, you can only go so fast when you're walking, biking, kayaking, what have you. You cannot, there's no way that you can't see what's around you, where you are. Whereas if you're in a train or a car or obviously an airplane, you miss so much stuff. And of course, sometimes, you know, I travel like that plenty, but it's so different when you're on the ground. Like you said, you have to be cognizant of the nature around you, of the people around you, of the culture around you, because you can't really get away from it.
Exactly. You've got nothing to hide behind. And I think that, you know, that's not always the ideal situation. Sometimes you really do want to bury your head in the sand and get away from everything, but you have to face up to it and deal with it. And I think that probably makes you a stronger person in many ways, because you have to be really self-reliant and you have to really kind of get to grips with situations like that and work out how to navigate them for yourself without these fallbacks.
Right. If someone is brand new to the whole adventure cycling idea, like someone like myself, what types of advice do you have for them? Where should they start?
I would suggest getting on whatever bike you already have and going off for a 24-hour bike tour. So just, you know, one day cycling, camping out, and coming back. And that is just the day a day in the life of of a long distance transcontinental bike ride, really. It doesn't get any more complicated than that. Once you set off, the only difference is that you're doing it day after day after day.
Right. You're not coming home to a bed after one night. You're coming home to a bed after 3.5 years.
Sure, exactly. But, you know, that's a way of getting a flavor of it for sure. And, you know, a way of starting to see if it's for you or not, I suppose, because it's not going to be for everyone. Right. But on the other hand, a lot of the things that people are worried about when they, you know, think about traveling by bicycle are not really that much of an issue at all. And some of the biggest worries people have, in my experience, are not really, you know, things that need to be worried about. But obviously, like any kind of big new thing, it's very difficult to break it down into its component part and look at it at that level. It's quite a daunting and overwhelming thing in many ways, because it is a big departure from normality. There's no denying it.
Sure.
But if you are if you are interested in the idea, then going out for a one day bike ride and putting up a tent is manageable, I think, for pretty much everybody, and that's the way to get started.
Yeah, and you've got a post that's 3 easy steps to cycling around the world. So can you enlighten the masses listening to what those 3 easy steps to cycling around the world are?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So the first thing you need to do is find a bicycle.
Right.
Because you won't get far without a bike on a long bike trip. And the second thing you need to do is to quit your job.
Okay. So easy enough.
Just easy. That's a case of just writing a, you know, resignation letter to your boss and giving it to him. And then you just need to set off, basically.
There you go.
And that's it.
That's it. Now, if you guys are interested, Tom does have then optional steps underneath that where, you know, you could do research or you could train or you could spend time saving money, stuff like that. But that's basically all it includes, right?
Pretty much. I mean, what I was trying to point out with that article, I mean, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but
of course,
what I was trying to point out was that's the bare minimum. A bicycle and the willingness to leave and the time to do it. That's really all that is necessary, because all you're doing is just pedaling a bike, and everyone knows how to do that.
Right.
Pretty much anyone could put up a tent, and pretty much anyone could flag down a pedestrian and ask if there's anywhere they can camp. And,
right.
You know, pop into a grocery store and buy some, you know, top ramen noodles, which is all you need to eat. And that's all there is to it. It's just that. And
yeah.
It's just the amount of time. You know, people ask how long my trip was, and I say 3.5 years. But it was just each day was just me pedaling a bike, stopping for some food, asking a passerby if I could camp, so wrapping up a tent and going to sleep. And I just, the fact that I did it that many times is not really. It doesn't change the basic actions.
Very true. Yeah, and I think a lot of the people who have come on the show, and that's the point that we try to get across, is you just have to do it. Sometimes people want to plan so much, especially for like an epic journey. And planning, you should do some planning, I guess, if you want to. But the main point, I think, is just going out and do it. And like you said, if people do want to take these epic trips, we'll just go do it for a night. Everyone can spare a night. You don't have to write a resignation letter to go spend a night, you know, bike somewhere and spend a night somewhere. So yeah, I think that advice is really top-notch advice to just go do it, see if you like it. And if you do, then just keep going down that path.
Definitely. But I mean, in retrospect, I look at the amount of planning that I did before I set off, and, you know, it was way too much. I spent almost a year preparing to leave, and, you know, looking back, it seems totally ridiculous. But the fact was, it got me to the start line. And so if you do need to, you know, investigate and try and figure everything out beforehand to actually get to the point where you are ready to leave, then go for it. And if you throw your plans out the window after a fortnight, like I did, then it doesn't matter, because you left, and that's the biggest hurdle to jump.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, overcomplicating a trip shouldn't be something that prevents it from happening at all. So I think that's just something to bear in mind.
Very.
If you are doing the planning, that it's very easy to overcomplicate it.
So what is it then about traveling? Because you did this 3.5 year trip, which I guess it is traveling, but it's even so much more than that. It was your day-to-day life, really. But what is it about traveling that keeps you coming back for more? Why do you continue to travel over and over and over again to all these new experiences?
There's a lot of reasons. One of the big ones is that I like to challenge myself, and I don't mean in a physical sense so much as I like to challenge what I think I know about the world, and I like to challenge myself in terms of learning new things. And at the moment, this is an example, my project this year is to learn Persian, which is not necessarily most people's first choice of foreign language,
right?
For very personal reasons, which I won't give away for the sake of not ruining the film.
There you go. Good.
there's a very good reason for me to learn Persian. And so I spent the first 3 months of this year cramming vocabulary with flashcards and some very good techniques. I think from one of your previous guests, Benny Lewis.
Oh, yeah. Benny from Fluent 3 Months. Yeah, previous guest.
Yeah. Good. Fantastic advice from him. And then when I went to Iran in April, and then went and spent 2 months there, I was able to get to the point by the end of the trip where I could speak Persian all day, every day. And yes, it was brilliant Persian, but I didn't need English anymore. And that was an absolute revelation. And that was a big personal challenge for me to overcome. And the travel was a vehicle for that. The travel was what enabled that to happen, and that new experience and that challenge to be overcome. So, I guess my reasons for traveling are always evolving, but they always come down to kind of, their personal reasons. They're not it's not for bragging, right? And it's not for trying to prove anything or break records or anything like that. It's for the process of, it's for learning and.
Pushing yourself to be better and develop and not stagnate at, in whatever area it is that
exactly.
You want to push yourself.
Exactly, because I think you can very easily get complacent and flabby by staying at home too much. And it's never easy to kind of up sticks and jet off. I still get nervous and I still
yes.
have massive doubts about whether or not this is really the right thing to do whenever I do go on an adventure, but I never regret it. I'm really glad that I've managed to somehow design my current lifestyle to allow me to do these trips, because there are many lifestyles I could live which wouldn't allow me that amount of freedom.
Right.
I suppose.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm pretty lucky.
And, yeah.
Should be appreciative.
Yeah. Well, I think that taking advantage of the travel is important. Like, you have built a lifestyle around the fact that you can, but then you actually then take advantage of it. And like you said, appreciate it.
Yeah. And one big thing that has kind of come to light recently, especially with this Janapar film project, is the sharing aspect of it. And that's been the kind of the counterbalance to the fairly self-indulgent traveling for your own personal reasons thing. As I said earlier on, I was always really interested in writing and photography. And I started a blog when I left on my trip because, people did that. But it actually ended up being a really important hobby and a really important creative outlet. And I found this whole kind of community of people who were reading about what I was doing, kind of growing around the blog. And that suddenly became incredibly fulfilling to be able to take what I was learning and what I was experiencing and sharing it through the writing and through the photography and now through this film. So that's, I guess that's a way of, I guess trying to give back a little bit from something which, let's face it, is not the most important thing in the world, which in the grand scheme of things.
Right. Yeah, I think that's really important, Tom. And your movie does kind of do that, I think. It shows people what is possible and it kind of inspires them to do it. And it does give back to that. And I absolutely love people who love to travel, obviously. That's why I have a podcast about it. And I also like people who are constantly looking for ways to do it cheaper, because I hate hearing the excuse that people can't travel because they don't have enough money. And you wrote a fantastic post just recently. It's your newest one that puts it in perspective, and it's entitled How to Go Cycle Touring for the Price of One Round of Drinks. And you broke it down to 3 pints of beer, two glasses of red wine and a gin and tonic for a total of $38, right?
So that's right.
And then you actually, I love this because that's what I try to do to people on my site. I say, like, under two tanks of gas and you can fly anywhere in the world. Like, put it in perspective for people. So a round of drinks, and you said that someone could go cycle touring for that price, and then you actually did it. So how did you pull that off?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is actually a long-term thing. I've been working on this for months, kind of behind the scenes. But the point was that it's very easy to say you don't need much money to go traveling. Anyone can say that.
Right.
You constantly hear stories about it, but let's actually do it and document how that might work. And so I decided that because I hear the same excuse as you, which is that, oh, I'd love to go on a big bike trip, but I couldn't afford all of the equipment. And of course, you can spend thousands of pounds on a nice bike and tent and stove and all this kind of thing. But I don't think that that's an excuse. And to prove that it was not a valid excuse. And so I set out to get a touring bike and a tent, camping equipment, cooking equipment, all the tools and spares, clothing to do it in, and the luggage to carry everything for as close to free as possible. And I wanted to do that by means that anybody could then go out and replicate, not just things that I could do because I've been blogging a few years and I know industry people and all that kind of thing. I tried to be resourceful and imaginative and find places where I could pick up free or cheap stuff. And so that was things like going to recycling centers, negotiating really hard with people who ran them, that kind of thing. Asking friends who might not be cyclists or travelers, but might, you know, have a sleeping bag lying around they didn't need. Looking on things like the Free Cycle network. I think that's fairly widespread now.
Yeah, Free Cycle or Craigslist in the States.
Exactly. Yeah. So places where you can get free stuff and swapping things or exchanging some of your time for, you know, being given something in return instead of money. So basically, I guess, bartering your time for something that you need. And after a few months of kind of doing that, kind of whenever I had the free time, it wasn't a full-time thing or anything, I had got all of this stuff, and I totaled up how much money I'd actually spent, how much cash it had cost me. And it came to £25.17, which, as you said, is $38
right,
for a bike, the luggage, the camping equipment, the cooking equipment, tools, spares, and clothing.
Wow.
And I wrote all of this up into a fairly extensive blog post, with the hope that it would make people who are using the excuse of not having enough money think twice about whether it was really that, or whether there was something deeper that they were worried about, which they were using money as an excuse kind of
right,
to cover. I mean, it's one way of doing things. You know, there are other ways of doing them. You can spend some cash and get everything that's all nice and shiny and stuff, but money definitely shouldn't stop you from doing a bike trip. And hopefully I've kind of tried to show how, or at least prove that that's the case.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it is a fairly extensive post, and we'll link it in the show notes because it's just very thorough, and you go through every step you took, and you basically disprove the notion over and over and over again that you need a lot of money to travel, which is what this podcast and what our website is really about, is getting out and traveling more while spending less. And no, you know, whatever way that is that people do it, whether, you know, it's staying in a lower rung hotel than a top hotel, or staying in a hostel rather than a hotel, or whatever it is, it doesn't have to be the same way for everyone, but just seeing that it is possible. And I really, really like that you put that post up, because for people looking to do a bike tour, that is the thing that I'll point anyone to, because it's a great guide for how people can do it very, very cheap.
Well, I'm hoping that the second part of the article will be a demonstration of how you can then go and take all of that and go on a bike trip. It will cost you almost no money as well. And I've had a little bit of practice at that, I could say.
Yeah.
I got from England to Istanbul, which is a 4-month ride across Europe. And I spent what at the time was about €4.50 a day, which would probably be about $6 a day,
right,
doing that. So I've had a bit of experience kind of traveling, actually being on the road for almost no money.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do another experiment, part two of this experiment, to kind of show how that might work as well.
Okay, well, we'll be looking out for that. Is there anything else that you have coming up that people should be looking out for? Any new projects or things that you'll be doing?
I've got, this is the thing, I have quite a lot of ideas now for what I'm to do next on in terms of my own adventures, but also in the creative sense, in the writing and the blogging and trying to put some, you know, useful resources out there for people planning their own trips. And it's one of those situations where what I should do next is not quite clear. So I think the next thing I'm going to do is probably put a vote out there and try and get an idea of what would be most useful to people who have ideas to go on bike trips but aren't quite sure about, you know, a particular aspect of it. And just put a list of some of the ideas I've got for what I might write or create next, which would help people, and see which one kind of strikes a chord with the readers I've got and with any new readers who come along as well. And hopefully the result will be that I can, you know, be of more use to the community of cycle tourists or potential cycle tourists who are out there. And I think that's a growing community. It's becoming more and more popular. And I'd really like to be able to kind of try and be a service to that community. And so the next creative project will be something aimed at getting more people out there.
That's awesome. Yeah, taking your expertise and helping others learn from what you've done instead of having to learn it all on their own, which is, you know, I think what most of us who have blogs and websites try to do is just take our expertise and make it easier for someone to get in, make the barriers of entry lower so that they can actually get out and do it.
Exactly. I try and strike a balance between telling stories, which are just there for, you know, entertainment and interest and intrigue and the useful stuff. It can be easy to get heavy on the kind of the how to do this, how to do that stuff. But I'd like to try and mix it up and try and keep it quite personal as well, because a personal journey is what I'm trying to convince people that they should try and do. Not an imitation of something or someone else's trip, but, you know, a journey which is motivated for really personal reasons, because those are the journeys which teach you and develop you, and then hopefully in a really idealistic way enable you to go off and make a positive change in other parts of life.
Yeah, very, very awesome, Tom, and thanks so much for coming on the show today. It was wonderful to meet you a few weeks ago in person. I'm just incredibly thankful that listeners could also get to hear your amazing story and your expertise here on the podcast. So I really, really appreciate you coming on.
All right. Well, it's been a pleasure, and hopefully it's been of use and interest to people.
I'm sure it has. Before I let you go, tell people where they can find you online, and most importantly, how they can check out Janapar, the movie, for themselves.
Sure. So my blog is at tomsbiketrip.com. So that's fairly simple. And on there, if you are interested in the feature film, which came out a few months ago, which was shown at the World Domination Summit, there's very, very clear and obvious links from the sidebar of my blog to where you can go and download it and watch it. Or you can order a DVD worldwide if you'd rather actually have a physical disc. And yeah, it's been a real labor of love. So I hope people get something from watching that. It's been a very, very long process.
Yeah, long is the correct word for that, then.
Indeed. Six years and counting.
Wow.
So,
well, once again, thanks a lot. You're a real inspiration, Tom. I really appreciate you coming on.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, if you were wowed by Tom's story and you want to see the video that we've been talking about, Janapar, you can actually watch the trailer. We've embedded it on the show notes at extrapackapiants.com. But if you want to see the entire film, which I highly recommend, it's got beautiful cinematography. It's an awesome story. You can go to janapar.com, help support Tom, buy the movie, buy the book. I know he'll be very appreciative of that, and you're going to be getting a great film out of it. If you are interested in a frequent flyer bootcamp, which we talked about at the beginning of this podcast, head on over to extrapackofpeanuts.com/frequent flyer bootcamp. We'll be showing you how to do all types of crazy stuff with your frequent flyer miles and how to take the confusion out of that. You can add free one-ways onto your tickets, which is just going to allow you to travel even more while spending less, which is the ethos here at Extra Pack of Peanuts. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. And until next time, happy free travels. Yeah.